Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 15th day of May, the Ides of May.
That's right.
Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. I have to say before we start, God bless both Michael Oden and Dennis Worster.
Hey, I'll take what I can get.
It would have been me alone today had it not been for these two guys. And I am both honored and delighted that they have taken the time out today.
That's right. We are better than talking to the wall. Most of the time.
Yeah, yes. Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. I'll give you that one.
So I've heard.
So we are not, unless Steve, Steve is not even anywhere around. So we are not on YouTube today.
Right. Per my contract.
Per your contract, we are not doing video today. Dennis is far too handsome to be put on video because he would just get inundated.
He blows both off the screen, frankly.
Absolutely. There's no question.
But the good news is I'm wearing my internet pants today, so we'll be all set.
Do I want to know?
I'm wearing pants. So
okay, that's important. Thank you for that. Yeah. I appreciate that.
HR said, yeah.
No, wear pants.
Anyway.
When you're in the office. It's stuff we don't remember. It's been a year.
Mm.
All right, so security researchers, the security researcher who discovered the crack Wi-Fi vulnerability has discovered a slew of other flaws with the wireless protocol most of us use to power our online lives. The vulnerabilities relate to how Wi-Fi handles large chunks of data, with some being related to the Wi-Fi standard itself and some being related to how it's implemented by device manufacturers. The researcher, Mathy Van Hoff, called the collection of vulnerabilities frag attacks. He also says the vulnerabilities could be exploited by hackers, allowing them to intercept sensitive data or show users fake websites, even if they're using Wi-Fi networks secured with WPA2 or even WPA3.
Oh, good.
Exactly. They could also theoretically exploit other devices on your home network, like the entire Internet of Things, which has no security at all. Don't get me started.
That's right. The S in IoT stands for security.
Exactly.
That's how you know.
There are 12 different attack vectors that fall under the classification, which all work in different ways. Let me repeat that for you. There are 12 different attack vectors that fall under the classification, which all work in different ways. One exploits routers accepting plain text during handshake. One exploits routers catching data in certain types of networks, et cetera, et cetera. Van Hoff says that the flaws are widespread, affecting many devices, meaning there's a lot of updating to do. Some vendors have already released patches for some of their products. You can release the list in the forum post. I'll tell you at the end. As for anything else you need to do, take the usual steps. Keep your computers updated. Use strong, unique passwords. Don't visit shady sites. Make sure you're using HTTPS as often as possible. We've been through this litany before. Other than that, it's mostly being thankful that you're not in charge of a widespread IT infrastructure.
Gulp.
So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Wi-Fi has been vulnerable since day one.
You know, so for the last, 20 years?
That's all. Really, that's all.
Gee whiz.
It's right. Your choices are, I've updated my router, mine hasn't updated yet, I haven't checked mine yet, I don't know how to keep safe, and going commando, baby. Oh, and other, of course.
And if you're one of those don't know how to keep safe people, give us a call and we can talk about it.
That's what we're here for. So far, there are 20 votes. I've updated my router is squeaking ahead if I haven't checked mine yet. The four of you said I haven't checked mine yet, need to get on it this instant, this stinking instant. As do all the rest of you. And of course, if you want to see that list of affected devices, the ones that have already released patches.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now.
Actually. Yeah. You can check it out at our forum at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down in the is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 15 May 21. Wi-Fi has been vulnerable since day one. You'll see the list of people who have updated their stuff so far. Yeah, and a couple of people have said and one guy said he's looked last week and saw nothing. That's good. You should look every single week.
Yep.
But it does have an update now, which clearly means that they know about this and are fixing it.
Hmm.
And
I'm noticing that my manufacturer is not listed yet.
Yeah, so that it doesn't mean they aren't vulnerable. It means they haven't released an update yet.
Right.
Right.
But they did just release one at the beginning of last month, so I suspect they are probably working on it.
I suspect so, too.
I will keep looking.
I am hoping that is true of mine. Also, of course, please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, I checked mine. Mine has no current update, but I updated it last week. So, like you, either they fixed it already,
right?
Or there's another update coming. So keep checking, check every day. It's not that hard. Almost every router has essentially a web page,
right?
That you can go to that's internal to your network, and you log in with your admin password, which of course you have changed from the default,
right? So that people can't park outside your apartment and change the settings on your router,
right?
Like changing the password.
Because every bad guy knows the passwords, the default passwords to routers.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
The manufacturers put them in by default.
Right.
And it's so that they have some place.
And never change them.
Right. And they put them in the instruction manual. And it turns out other people have that instruction manual, not just you.
You can get it online. You don't even have to buy a router.
That's right.
So at any rate, make sure you have changed your admin password.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you write down that admin password. You are, of course, using NPass or LastPass or one of those. So put it in there immediately.
What do you think about putting that admin password on the router itself, like getting a piece of masking tape and writing it on?
I honestly do not have a problem with that.
Okay.
Because if somebody sees it, they're already in your house.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're in the whatever crazy closet you have all of your networking stuff in.
Right.
Okay, so you've got bigger problems.
You've got bigger problems at that point, you know.
Okay, so get your favorite label maker.
If they're going to steal your Wi-Fi, they're going to literally take your router away with them. So,
right.
You know, that's a separate issue right there.
And
if anything else, they would just reset it.
So if you're worried that you might set it to something and forget what it is, then tape a little note to the router itself so that the next time you go to it, you can say, aha.
How do you feel about that?
You know, I'm much like you. I don't have a problem with that. Yes, if
in a home.
Yes, at home.
In a business like where you are.
In a business,
you don't do that.
When people put post-its with their passwords and stick them to the monitor, that makes my eye twitch a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that. But I understand it, but I still like it better when people have password managers that they keep in their phone or something else that's hidden behind some other security.
Look,
not out in the open.
At the very least, at the absolute total very least, get a little notebook.
Yeah.
Put them in the little notebook and don't leave that notebook lying around. Stick it in your pocket.
Right.
Better, much, much better, is using a password manager.
A piece of software.
A piece of software that and a product like NPass, LastPass,
any one of those.
Particularly one that you can put on your desktop, your laptop, your phone.
And they all synchronize to each other.
And they all synchronize to each other, so you can use it anywhere. I'm using, I use NPass because I can also put it on my Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
So I have that everywhere, and it syncs to a very highly encrypted file. That I keep online somewhere that I'm not telling you, so that it can sync across my multiple devices. So if I put a new password into one device,
right,
it's available on all my devices.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing that. I've kind of jumped back and forth between a few different password managers over the years. I've used 1Password in the past. At work, we use LastPass because the university makes that available to everyone, which I think if you own a business is a very smart idea to get a password manager and make it available to all of your employees. Business owners, I'm talking to you.
Yep.
And personally, I've gone to using Apple's iCloud Keychain because it's built in. It synchronizes with your browsers. So when you get to a website where it's asking for username and password, I don't have to remember either one. I supply my fingerprint to the keyboard, and it says, oh, yeah, you're Dennis. Okay, we'll fill this in for you. You don't have to know what it is. And I just take another sip of my beverage and move on.
Yep, I do the same thing. I have it set up for my fingerprint, so
it's
that's all good.
Super handy. I've always got my fingers with me. Exactly. I take them everywhere.
But to get back to that router, if you have not changed the default password in your router, you may no longer own your network. It's that simple.
Yep.
Wi-Fi goes outside your home. I can sit in people's driveway. There's a guy in my neighborhood with a ludicrously strong signal and no security at all.
When the house I'm moving into is owned by my grandparents, and my grandmother got, for some reason, a top-of-the-line router.
Nice!
This thing has Wi-Fi to the end of the street.
Nice!
I had my phone on it, and I literally got Wi-Fi on my phone until we got to the corner.
That's hysterical.
You brought home the microwave popcorn from the store, and it just started popping.
Yeah. I hope you've got WPA3 on there, and I hope you've got change the password.
It's like...
Get your updates.
And get your updates.
2 years old, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect. So, yeah. And they've got, like I said, one of my neighbors has super strong Wi-Fi, and they have no password. They have no security.
It's a honeypot.
It's
a security honeypot. They're just checking to see who might connect to them and so that they can reverse hack them.
Right. Maybe it is. I don't connect to
it's
them.
It's a trick. It's a trap.
Right. It's a trap. It's a trap.
That's right.
So I would suggest that you make sure that you have changed the password, the administrator password.
Yes.
There are multiple passwords for a router. There's the password you use to log in from your wireless device. You should set that to something unique. And there is the password you use to log in as administrator.
Right, to make changes.
That's a separate password, right. And that should be a separate password, and it should also be long. And every router comes with a default password that you really must change immediately. Mm-hmm. I hope there are at least a few of you who are rushing over to your routers right now. Well, not to the router, but to the... to your computer so you can log into your router and change that password. And then while you're there, write it in your password manager. So, you know, under the name of your router, like Netgear or whatever you called your router, whatever it's called.
Sure. I've seen people that will take a box with recipe cards in it and put a separate card for each password, and then they'll flip through them. I've seen people that will take an address book and use the little A through Z to write down, look, go for R for router, and write down the password and maybe put the date next to it. And I've seen people do all kinds of things. But whatever works for your brain is fine. Just make sure to do it and make sure to make these as complex as you can. A software-based password manager has some advantages in that it can create very long, very random strings of text for you and then remember them for you. And as long as you remember the master password that unlocks the rest, then it will do the rest of the work for you. But as a fallback, if you're a paper and pencil kind of person, writing them down on paper is not a bad thing. Just make sure to keep that list somewhere secure.
Right. And as we say to people, look, if you've got a password manager, for example, EnPass, all my passwords are 64 characters.
Yes. You couldn't write them. You couldn't say them out loud if you wanted to.
You cannot.
Or memorize them.
That's the point. And so, EnPass will let me put them into whatever device I need. However, if you're going to write them down, the better passwords to use would be a random string of four separate words.
Yeah.
horse battery staple, whatever the fourth one was.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Horse battery staple. It's an old computer person joke.
It's an old computer joke. XKCD, Randall Monroe. But the idea there is you've got four totally unrelated words, which makes it long, but also makes it fairly random.
Yeah, and memorable.
And memorable to you.
And that's the big part.
Particularly if you write it down, because when you write it down, you can then simply say, oh, yeah, it's horse battery staple correct.
And if you get it wrong, you rearrange them.
You rearrange them. But you can write it down so when you go to type it in, it's not.
Right. Seven consecutive consonants.
Seven consecutive consonants.
Unpronounceable.
It's Welch. Anyway, we should go to the phones. Our first caller is Christine from Brockport, New York. Hi, Christine. What's up?
Yes. Hi there. Thank you for your help. I really love your program.
Thanks.
So funny that you're talking about security because my Kaspersky subscription just ran out.
Yep.
And I've been toying with not upping that and going with something else. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
What makes you not interested in continuing with them?
Well, I know I've heard that there, you know, I know people who have free ones, and I'm like, okay, do I need to pay all this money? Is it really worth it?
Okay.
You know, that kind of stuff.
All right. So you're looking for something that might be a little more friendlier to your budget.
I mean, I can pay for it, but if there's something that I can get that's just as good for less money, I'm all for that.
All sure. Right. So where's the best bang for the buck, Nick, in security software?
Well, what operating system do you run?
PC.
Okay. Windows.
Probably Windows.
Yeah. So your top three, really, are Bitdefender, Kaspersky, and Trend Micro. Kaspersky is $60 a year, but there is a free version.
All right, we'll get you that.
Bitdefender is $40 a year, and there's a free version. And Trend Micro is $40 a year, and there's a free version. The thing you get when you pay for it is automation, mostly.
Okay.
So with something like Bitdefender or Kaspersky or Trend Micro, or really any of those, when you use them the way they're free, you have to update by hand. You have to sometimes run things by hand. Mm-hmm. And people don't. People are people.
Yeah.
Right. But for $40
bucks
a year.
They do it when they think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
$40 a year for something like Bitdefender, it automates updates. It automates running.
Right.
It runs every time you download something or whatever.
And that's $40 a year?
$40 a year.
Okay. So that's less than $1 a week.
Right. And that's $20 cheaper than Kaspersky.
Okay.
For a year.
Okay.
So that's not a bad idea. And it is both Windows and Android, if you're an Android user. And it'll handle, most of them will handle viruses and adware and spyware and ransomware and worms and stuff like that. But it is also a good idea to load super anti-spyware and malware bytes. And both of those, you would, for the free versions, you would run them by hand. But you don't have to run them constantly. You can run them once a day or whatever.
Yeah.
So one thing you should probably do is head on over to securitytango.com.
That's a really good idea.
Okay.
That's securitytango.com. And at the Security Tango across the top, you'll see a menu. One of the choices is Let's Dance. Under Let's Dance, you'll see the Windows Waltz. And if you click on that, yeah, the conceit is it's a tango. It's dancing.
It's dancing.
You're dancing.
Got it.
Remember dancing with people?
I remember it. I last did it long before my arthritis killed my knees, but I remember it. At any rate, under the Windows Waltz, there's a thing you would go through, not regularly, but once,
periodically.
To make sure you've cleaned your machine thoroughly. But down farther, there's a list of all the stuff that you should probably load. Super anti-spyware and malware bytes.
Yeah, those are two very good places to start. Just to give yourself a nice baseline to make sure that you're nice and clean before you install anything else.
Right. Those are under step two. Download all the necessary files, and you can print this page out and check off each thing as you do it.
Gotcha.
In addition, at that top list where it's Let's Dance, there's also Windows software. And there's a list of antivirus programs, a list of anti-malware programs, a list of rootkit removers, and even some stuff for Windows 7. For those poor souls.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So if I keep Kaspersky, will it include all that stuff for me that you're talking about?
No, Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes are separate programs from other companies.
They all check in slightly different ways for slightly different things.
Right. Any one of them protects you up to, say, 90%. All three of them together get you up to about 99.9.
Okay. So what I hear you saying is that it might be good just to stay with my Kaspersky if I want to just have it do it for me, all the updating. I don't have to worry about it.
Just the way it's doing now.
Yes, you've got that right.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So for the convenience of that, that's what you're paying for.
You're paying for the convenience, and that's really all you're paying for. But believe me, that's everything.
It adds up.
Because otherwise you have to do it all by hand, and we're all human. Well, at least I am.
Exactly. All right. Well, listen, I really appreciate it, and I'll continue to listen to you for more great hints.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yep, and call back anytime.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Oh, we do have a live stream up. How did that happen?
The
power of Steve. We do have a live stream.
What a great guy.
He's okay.
Yeah, we should keep him
around. It's got Michael, it's got you, it's got me, it's got Rob.
That's right.
We're all here. The stream is
and it
running.
Honors my contract. It's great.
Nine people are watching, and one person gave it a thumbs up. Come on, people.
Put your hands in the air.
Put your hands on your keyboard and give us a thumbs up.
That's right. We need it. It really helps.
Exactly. The more people we have who are subscribed, and the more people we have giving us thumbs up. There's a second one. Thank you so much, whoever that was.
Yes. We appreciate that.
But yeah, so remember, when you are updating your router, change your password. Make it not the... If you've already changed it, you're fine. But if not, then you really need to change your password. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Frank did. From Webster, New York. Hiya, Frank. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon. I have DSL with Frontier. And I have a password to access the wireless. But if I should happen to call them for tech support and they want me to get in to the modem, they give me an IP address number and then takes me to it. And then the password is just the default password, like admin or some such thing.
Right.
And I'm questionable about that. And they said, well, that's not a problem because they can only get to that through your PC. I wonder about that.
The answer is maybe, but only depending upon the answer to this question. Is your DSL connection connected through a wire to your computer?
Yes.
Okay. And does your DSL connection have any Wi-Fi antennas that broadcast a Wi-Fi network at your house?
The router is a combination, or the modem is a router also, and that does transmit wireless.
Okay.
So I'm thinking if anybody else has that number.
Yes. If other people can get on your wireless network and they have that number, then you're in trouble.
Okay.
I mean, you're not in trouble, but you're susceptible.
No, but it could be, yes.
You're potentially vulnerable to that.
Yeah.
That's why it's important to have a strong password on the Wi-Fi itself. So, you know, when you sign into Wi-Fi.
I do have that. Yeah,
okay. That's a good start.
That's a very good start.
And you picked a very good time to call.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, and that's a point I should have made earlier, and thank you, Frank, for that.
Mm-hmm.
If your router is not owned by you, there's very little you can do to either update it or change the password. So if you are using a router from your local phone company or your local cable company or whatever,
it's supplied by them.
Right, you cannot change that. Now, some of us have something from our local fiber company, and that is, in my case at least, entirely different, because Greenlight does, excuse me, the fiber company does, I'm trying to be clear, the fiber company does not provide Wi-Fi. So all it does is provide me a connection to the internet. And so there's no management of that device.
Right.
It's literally it's beyond a dumb box. It's a stupid box.
Yeah.
You can't log into it. You can't do anything with it.
Yep.
It's just there.
It's an appliance.
It's just an appliance. It's like a toaster that's not on the internet. Again, somebody could come to your house and steal it.
Those?
But if they get in, yeah, they do. But if they get into your house, you've got bigger problems to begin with. So, you have your own router connected to that device. So if it's a router with wireless that you do not own and therefore do not control, there's nothing you can do about that.
Okay. All right. So I just got to hope the password's good enough, and that's it.
That's pretty much it. Or you ask them to give you a router that does not have Wi-Fi, and then you attach that to your own router, which you then can control.
Okay.
Those are really your only two choices.
Or wait until I can get fiber.
Or wait until you get fiber.
Yes. Okay. Or move to a neighborhood that already has fiber. Because often that's faster than waiting.
Yeah, it is.
My in-law, they're not that far from us, and they have it. But we're not going to get it for a while. We're too...
Yeah, people forget how big the area is that these guys are covering.
It's true.
Yeah. You know? I went down one day, and there were five trucks coming down Bay Road, and, you know...
It wouldn't drive me so crazy if their main office wasn't about 2.5 miles from my house.
Isn't that the worst?
I could see their big sign lit up as I drive by on the expressway.
Definitely.
I saw them.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Frank.
I have to admit that I had a kind of an in because we'd already had Mike Murphy on our show.
You know a guy.
I know a guy. So when I saw them hooking up the guy next door to me, literally next door to me, and it heard nothing online anywhere about our neighborhood.
Through the curtains. Yeah. What is that? Yeah. What's that truck? Why does that say Greenlight on it? Wait a minute. What's going on here?
I did.
Nick storms out of the...
And he said what was happening was they had just gotten the right-of-way.
Uh-huh.
And in order to use the right-of-way, the pole was on this guy's property. So technically he owned it.
Oh, really?
Apparently.
I was under the impression that RG&E owned all the poles.
So did I, but they had to get his permission. And his deal was, you give me a connection.
A little bit of leverage there.
And I will let you go through my yard.
And they said, done.
So he said, so we hooked him up, and now we can hook up the rest of the neighborhood. But he said, so we really are doing things in order here.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Well, I imagine there are a whole bunch of rules that they have to follow.
Well, that's the big problem. You know, the regulatory rules that they have to follow.
Yeah.
And the fact that The local phone company and the local cable company own all the right-of-ways.
Yes, yes.
It makes it difficult for them to move from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Well, I know my town supervisor, where I live in Henrietta, is very interested in having Greenlight do as much as they possibly can in our neighborhood. And I'm definitely interested in doing that. My neighborhood also has poles. So if you're listening, Greenlight, let's talk. Let's talk. We can make this work. I'm ready to give you money.
See,
let's make it work.
And that's the big thing. There's one of the things that we are finding all across the nation is that houses that have fiber connections sell for more money.
Well, yes, and even more than the ridiculously crazy amounts that houses have been selling for recently.
Right, right. You can bump up your price on your house.
Sure.
Particularly in an area like Rochester, which is high tech.
Yes. Right. And lots of technical colleges with people graduating who might want to stay in the area. You want to make your property as attractive as you can to people who are going into lucrative positions. That's a great way to do it, is make sure you're in a neighborhood that's fiber ready.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's exactly right. Get your ducks in a row. And it used to be, at least, and I assume it's still true, you can go on to Greenlight's website and have them send you a kit that with door hangers and everything else.
Yes, it's true. They'll give you a big stack of pre-printed post-it notes that you can give out on Halloween and hand to people as they drive through the neighborhood.
Yep. And I told you this story already. I got to my porch one day, and there was a guy on my porch. Guy up the road. I knew him. I knew him well.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hanging something on my door knob. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, I went and got this kit from a company called Greenlight and putting it on everybody's door so that, you know, we can get enough signatures to get our neighborhood." I said, "Our neighborhood's already wired. I've had Greenlight for 3 months." He literally dropped all the flyers and things on my porch and tore off down the street.
Cloud of dust behind him.
All right.
Haven't seen him since.
haven't seen him. He's been happy online.
Pretty sure he's still here.
Yeah. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. So I tuned a little bit late. You may have already covered this. I heard yesterday that AT&T is no longer going to be supporting,
3G.
You know, 3G or 2G? 2G, I guess.
Well, definitely 2G, and they're working on dropping 3G.
So I have an iPhone 5S.
Okay.
Is that, that's 3G, isn't it?
I am furiously Googling.
Yeah.
Checking now, 5S.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the issues with all of this is the cost for all the devices that the carrier has to put on poles.
Right.
And if they've got to put up 5G,
right.
And, you know, it costs X dollars for a 3, 4, 5G device and only X minus Y dollars for a 4, 5G device, they're going to drop 3G. In a hot New York minute.
All right, I got a list of compatible networks. You got your 3G network, your CDMA, your GSM, your EVDO, HSPA Plus, and LTE. So if you've got LTE, does that give you 4G?
No, LTE is not 4G.
No? Different?
It's similar.
All right, we're investigating. You've released the hounds, and we're...
LTE... Okay, it is a form of 4G.
Okay.
And so you often see it called 4G LTE. But LTE stands for long-term evolution.
Right.
I'm not entirely certain what that means, so but apparently they're at least on dry land at this point.
I think it's more of a marketing thing.
Yeah. So if you have LTE, you have 4G. But it depends on... which did you say you had? The
5S?
5S.
The 5S was a very solid phone. Slightly larger screen size. Added the... what do they call it? Touch ID fingerprint sensor at the bottom. You know, just about 10 months ago or 11 months ago, Apple released a very similar phone in size called the iPhone SE. It's the second generation iPhone SE that has many of the same features, but will be far more compatible with today's modern networks.
Yeah.
If you elect to go with a different phone, an SE would be a good choice, and the pricing on it is much less than typical iPhone pricing.
Yeah, I do like the form factor, because I like to put it in my shirt pocket.
Yeah.
It's a bit smaller than the newer phones.
Yep, I would take a look at the SE, because it's really pretty darn close to the same size. And if you feel like you want to go a little bit further, and you really like the flat sides of the 5S, the iPhone 12 mini is the one that I use, and it is remarkably similar to the iPhone 5 series, but also has all of the fast modern networks in it if you elect to move to a newer phone. And the other advantage you get, I don't know if you've replaced the battery in your 5S recently, but
I have, yes.
Okay. The battery in the newer phones is much larger, and it's more, the chipsets inside are more efficient, so you get much longer battery life between charges. Now, I know that wasn't may not be the answer you wanted to hear, but if the carrier is moving away from a certain flavor of networking, it's very possible that your device could be orphaned.
What's the time frame that AT&T is going to be dropping?
You know, I was just looking at their website last night. Let me take a look at that.
February 2022.
Thank you. Very good, sir.
Okay. Well, that gives us about 7-8 months, yeah.
Yep, you got a little bit of time.
The other thing is, according to Apple, okay, how did they put this? If the supported carrier offers 4G...
Yeah.
And you're in the country you bought the phone from.
Okay.
And when you bought the phone, they included 4G. It'll work.
That sounds like they've been changing the guts.
So it's,
I think it's per market. They might put in different antennas different frequencies.
Exactly. So the thing to do is to see if you can set your phone to 4G now, because 4G is out there.
Right.
Right.
So if you can, then you win. If you don't, then I guess you lose, and I'm sorry.
It'll usually say LTE at the top of the screen.
Yeah.
Or it'll say 3G at the top of the screen.
Right. Yeah, I have to admit it. I'm a bit of a Luddite. What can I say?
That's okay.
And
you've called the right place. We're here to help you.
So, we did buy this phone aftermarket. It technically is a refurbished phone, but I don't know if that rule about, if you bought it while 4G was around and whether you can connect to it or not. I'll have to call either Apple or AT&T, go to AT&T and talk to them about what the support's going to be.
Yeah, information I have here was not conclusive. Other callers may know more about it, so be sure to stay on and listen to the rest of the show. Other people may call in with additional information.
Right, but it depends on where you bought the phone, when you bought the phone,
right,
and yada, yada, yada.
I'm going to presume that you bought it in the U.S.,
But if your phone says LTE near the top, then it is definitely 4G. It's a form of 4G.
Right.
Okay.
In worst case scenario, you've got all summer and all this fall and most of the winter.
And also on the iPhone 5S, you can switch to 4G. So go into settings.
Okay.
Select mobile data. You should probably write this down. Go into settings, select mobile data, then select mobile data options, then select voice and data,
mm-hmm.
and you have choices of 2G, 3G, 4G.
Hmm.
So if you do see 4G there, you can switch to it. If you don't see 4G there, there's your answer.
Okay. I don't see mobile data in the settings. I see cellular. I don't see
sure.
mobile data.
Yep.
I may be looking at an old... I don't own an iPhone,
okay.
So maybe looking at a slightly older...
Well, and he may not be on the latest iOS, too.
Right, right, right.
Right, it's not the latest. I'm using the latest that's acceptable to...
I see.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, guys, you've been a lot of help. Thank you very much.
Yep. All right, thanks.
Right.
Good luck.
Bye.
Yeah, it's difficult to know what... especially on... admittedly slightly older equipment. You know, the iPhone 5S is, five, 6 years old now, or maybe more. And to know what it's compatible with, and carriers are trying to squeeze more and more people onto their existing infrastructure and the new speeds that people want to run things at, it's just not effective.
Not to mention that they would also like people to buy new stuff so they make more money.
Right. There's some, I won't say planned obsolescence, but there's some progress that's happening in that industry, and it does require compatible equipment.
I will say I have been very spoiled by the last year because I've been at home and my phone's been on Wi-Fi. I don't think I've used 12 minutes of cellular data.
Right. Yeah.
And the other day I was actually out in the world. It's still there for those of you who have yet to venture forth. I was out in the world and I looked something up on my phone. It was fast, but it was comparatively so slow.
Right. To be using the cell towers instead of your home network.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yes. I recently switched to that prepaid plan that's got that super hunky actor as their owner and
sure.
Sales pitch. You know, that movie star guy.
That movie star guy who recently did an ad with Rick Moranis.
Yes. That's right.
That's the one.
So he left
like
me
that one.
He left me a voicemail.
No kidding.
Well, pre-recorded, but
of course.
And it said, "Hey, you've only used 3.12 gigabytes of data. You don't need to be on the unlimited plan. You can drop down to the other plan and it'll save you some money." You know, we don't usually tell people this, but, you know, we're all about trying to do things differently and so forth and so on. And I thought that is such an interesting model to, hey, what if you can differentiate your company by, I don't know, being user friendly?
Exactly.
What a concept. And, you know, I was trying to figure out, well, for the next time period that I'm going to subscribe, do I really want to drop down lower? What happens if I go over? And I ran all the math and I looked at my usage, and again, this last year's kind of anomalous because I've been at home this whole time. But I think I can do that, and at least up for the next few months at the lower rate, and save a few bucks.
The only person in our household, and don't forget, I have a 20-something daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The only person in our household who uses data is my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Saturday, she's at the market, and she does
swipe
or whichever one it is. And
Square.
She also plays Square. Square is the one she
That's
uses.
That's the one.
And she's also plays music.
Oh, sure. So she's streaming music.
She streams music, and you know, it's a household where the mother is using the most data, which is so weird.
Why not?
But of course, now that we're all fully vaccinated.
That's right.
We can go out more, and I suspect we're going to be looking at our plan.
Good.
A little more.
Good. Yes. I'm so happy to hear that outside is there. I was wondering, and I hope that most of the things we like are going to still be around. I'm looking forward to going out to restaurants and seeing concerts and all these other things that I've been missing.
Yeah, I was telling Michael I actually went to lunch with a friend of mine the other day, and he's an ancient friend of mine. And yes, you're old. And we sat across from each other, and I was actually looking at a human being who I don't live with.
Yeah.
It was kind of wonderful.
Without a big rectangle around them.
Yeah.
He was on like, reach out and like touch him like, huh, oh, yeah. You are here.
Wow.
Hey, look at you. You're
3D.
And no lag. It was kind of great.
These graphics are fantastic.
Yeah. Wow. I really have upped my video card.
Yeah.
But yeah, so if you're looking to up your phone plan, you can usually go into the phone and see if you can get a better data connection than you have. Right now, at least, I don't know of a company that charges more for 4G, although I believe most, if not all of them, are charging more for 5G.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. You know, for honestly, you know, if you have to wait another third of a second to find the nearest taco place, get over yourself. Honestly, just get over yourself.
It'll be fine.
You'll be okay. It'll be fine. And Wi-Fi, of course, I would love to see public Wi-Fi. I don't see that as a on the horizon, although it, you know, it comes up all the time. But
hey, I didn't see grass in parcel 5 as on the horizon either, but here we are.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Things can change.
It is my hope that that either the city of Rochester or the Monroe County people will decide that ubiquitous Wi-Fi is a good idea.
Yeah, I could definitely see it.
I would love to see that happen. I guess we'll see. All right. That music tells us you have wasted, you and we have wasted an entire hour of our lives with this nonsense. But do not go away.
Why not?
Because there's a whole nother hour
of
the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites. We'll have more of Dennis Worster, more of Michael Oden, and way too much of me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And you are listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we're member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't forget to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll see you on the other side for a whole nother hour of Soundbites.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. And he was one-third correct. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, both Steve and Dave, one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Southwest, hiding among the mesas and the cacti.
Driving their convertible together, hand in hand.
Hand in hand, off a cliff. I know the story.
Well, maybe not the cliff part. We need them back.
Maybe not the cliff part. But we are sound. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, just like Richard did from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Richard. What's up?
Hi, Dave. Yes. Or not Dave.
Nick. I'll be Nick.
Yeah, Nick. Didn't you have a fellow that used to be on your show that did computer repairs or
yes.
something like that?
Yes.
That is true.
Both Dave and Steve do computer repairs. Steve does, well, Dave has retired, but Steve does both PCs and Macs, but neither of them is here this week, I'm afraid.
Where's he located?
You can find him online at mac-ave.com.
That's true.
M-A-C-A-V-E?
Yes, that's right.
M-A-C-A-V-E.com.
.com. Okay, thanks. Nick.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's right. Nick is your 411 for the afternoon. Feel free to call in if you need name or number.
That's my job.
He'll look it up for you. Let him Google it for you.
That's why I'm here.
That was a quick one.
That was quick. That was nice. That was a quick one.
Yeah, it was easy. We knew the answer right away. Didn't have to look anything up.
Right. So that's the... that's the beauty of this show. We do have
people think we pre-record people, this.
Yeah,
people think we know what questions are coming in advance. Heck no.
People think we know the answers. Heck no.
No, we know an answer.
That's right. We will make up any answer that you need.
That's
we are willing to do that for you because that's the kind of folks we are.
We presumed if you already knew the answer, you wouldn't be calling.
That's right. And if you knew the answer, you wouldn't call us. And since you don't know the answer, we can say pretty much anything we want. And you'd
That's
have
right.
to go, yeah, okay, that makes sense
o'clock
to me.
Every week. All right.
So you can give us a call. Michael is currently taking a call. So
That's
if you
true.
Get a busy signal, please just hold on. We will get to you and each caller in order as soon as possible.
We're so. Nerds. We're not used to being this popular.
Yeah. Remember, this place was not wired for call-in
shows. Nearly
show,
anything,
so.
Yeah.
For really anything, so we're doing what we can to do this.
So who's next?
We do have a caller on the line. Our next caller is Joan from Greece, New York. Hiya, Joan. What's up?
Actually, it's John.
John? Oh, okay.
That's
sorry.
My fault.
Our H and our A looked a little similar here.
That's my fault entirely. What's
our fault.
Up?
Please continue, John.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a proud member and
Thank
appreciative
you.
Of you doing the show every week.
Thanks. And we are very appreciative of you being a member. Thanks. So what's up?
I'm setting up a new laptop, and I decided to use Microsoft account.
Okay.
So that made an administrative account, and I didn't want that to be that way. So I tried all kinds of searches on Google and everything, but I finally set up a local administrator account. And that let me change the Microsoft account to a standard user.
Right. Yes, okay.
So is this the best way to do that? Or there's another thing about connecting and linking to your Microsoft account with the local user, but I don't know what that does.
Basically, being connected through your Microsoft account means that it's easier to get into other certain things like Microsoft 365 and things like that. You don't have to sign in again. You'll already be there. Having a local administrator be the person who actually administers the machine gives you a level of security in that that password doesn't go anywhere else. So as long as it's a good, strong password, you should be fine. And if you then use your Microsoft account as just a regular user, even if somebody does break into it, which is highly unlikely but not impossible, even if somebody does break into your machine, they're a little more limited in the amount of damage they can do. So you've got it set up right.
I'm trying to set up my Microsoft account so it uses Microsoft Authenticator on my phone.
Sure.
But now when I log in and it uses my Microsoft account, it wants a PIN.
Well, that's
probably what it's going to send to your phone through the authenticator, right?
Well, yeah. Is it asking for the PIN on the computer or on the authenticator?
On the computer.
Right. That's the way you've set it up to sign in. So you need to sign in and then go into to the sign in. Oh, boy.
We're looking here.
We're looking. That's I don't have a Microsoft computer in front of me.
Well, would it be the Microsoft account manager?
Possibly.
Yeah.
But in general, the authenticator will supply a number to you, and generally you would take that number and type it in to your computer in addition to the password that you'd give it, so that it's not just a password that someone may have guessed, but it's also a number that is unique and probably changes periodically that might be on your phone.
Okay, go ahead.
The way Microsoft Authenticator works, it just gives you a screen and you click on accept. So right.
So what you need to do is set up your account to use the Microsoft Authenticator.
Okay.
So you go. So sign into the to Microsoft using the account you want to use the authenticator with.
Okay.
Then you go into security settings. You may have to sign into the account again because they want to make sure you're you.
Yes.
Then it wants to verify you. And then that's where you get to choose whether you use email or text or the authenticator app.
Okay.
And then when you do the authenticator app, this assumes that you have signed in when you got the authenticator app on your phone, you signed in using the same username and password. So once you say use the authenticator app, it gives you a code. You enter it into the text box. There's a checkbox that says don't ask me again on this device. So it will remember that device, select verify, and you're done.
Okay, I'd rather have it use the authenticator all the time.
Right, so simply say, don't ask me again on this device. And then what will happen is every time it'll say, oh, he wants to use the authenticator, boom, off you go.
Right, not the password.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, John.
Thanks,
bye.
John.
All right.
Bye-bye. Yeah, everybody's got an authenticator now.
It's true.
Google has one. Apple has one. Microsoft has one.
Now, for people who don't know what that is, let's back up. Let's talk about multi-factor authentication.
Right.
So briefly, multi-factor authentication means it's not just your password. It's not just something you know. It's something you have or something that you are. If it's biometric, it could be your fingerprint or retina scan or something like that. It could be your phone. So if somebody wants to take your computer and they've managed to convince you to tell them what the password is through whatever means, then theoretically your data could be compromised. You know, they could figure out all of your banking information and other things that you might store on your computer, photos, etc., important things. So how do we protect that? Well, you can get the password, but what if there was an additional thing you also had to provide in order to get to your data? And these authenticator apps that are typically on a smartphone make it so that you not only have to supply that password, but you have to agree that, yes, that was me trying to log in just now. And you specify that on your phone by either generally clicking a little green checkbox that pops up on the screen or by supplying a number that appears on the screen. You type it back into the computer. That's the way things used to work years and years ago when people had these little key fobs. But that's multiple ways to authenticate, to prove to the computer that you are who you say you are. And that's multi-factor authentication, or MFA for short.
Right, multi-factor. Most people, you just use two factors, something you know, which is your password,
mm-hmm.
and something you have, which is your phone.
Yes.
And so that, as John is discovering, that makes it much more secure, but setting it up is a little more difficult. And frankly, it should be a little more difficult.
Right.
You want it to not be that easy.
Most of the time, the setup is three times the work that using it is. Once you get it set up, you're fine. It's no big deal. You've got a slightly different procedure, but it's very straightforward. But getting it set up can be a little fiddly.
I used Google's Authenticator for any number of things, and it's just a quick tap on my phone, which I always have with me, so where's the big deal?
Right.
It's pretty easy. All right, back to the phones. We're going to talk to William all the way in Hampton, Virginia. How are things down in Virginia?
Wonderful, Nick. How are things with you and your panelists up there in Rochester, Greece?
We're good, thank you very much. It's a semi-warm day, which is very exciting to us.
Yes, it's actually quite nice here today.
Not Virginia nice, but nice.
Yeah, it's Rochester nice.
So what's up?
It's a semi-warm day down here as well, fellas.
Oh,
good, that's what we like to hear.
An article came to my attention in notebookcheck.net, which is titled "Crypto Miners Could Soon Flood eBay with Cheap CPUs, Motherboards, and SSDs Acquired via GPU Bundle Purchases."
Right.
I would like to hear your ruminations, observations on said article. I've submitted it in the text line.
Ah, okay. Well, we will we'll investigate that.
Yeah, basically what they're talking about is crypto mining is where people are trying to get Bitcoins and Dogecoins and Litecoin and all the other coins. And the basic idea is that the best way to do that is with GPUs, graphic processing units. The most powerful chip in your computer is your graphics chip.
Right. Not your main processor, but the graphics processor
knows
how to do math way faster.
Way faster. And it's exactly the kind of math that crypto miners need.
Right.
So many people buy multiple GPU graphics cards to put into this the same machine. And that way they can mine cryptocurrency faster. The problem in a lot of cases is the graphics card people got wise to this and thought they're going to buy them anyway. Let's soak them. So they not only they bundle them. It's harder to buy a graphics card, a naked card than it is to buy a bundle with a motherboard and a graphics card.
Right.
So now these crypto miners all have these extra motherboards. What are they going to do with them? The deal, however, is that most of the time those are not high-end boards.
Right. It's an easy way for the company to move products that might not otherwise be selling very well.
Exactly.
And make their numbers look really good. Or look at all these things we sold. Well you only sold those because you bundled them with these things that were super high demand.
Right. So it's like, as Dennis just said, you know, in the last year, a lot of people have hung on to a machine they would have upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of product that's sitting around unsold.
Right.
So they've got these extra boards. Some of them will be some of them will be medium end.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them will be low end. Most of them are completely unused. But the cost is what counts. Well, you know, how much is it going to cost you to buy that board, considering what kind of board it is?
Right.
The other issue, of course, is that depending on the day, crypto mining is the greatest thing since laser sliced bread, or the bottom fell out of the market and everybody's selling.
Yeah, it's very volatile.
So, you know, you will find days when people are selling off everything and other days when people are buying up everything. So, you know.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for that market to swing up over 5-10% in a day.
Yeah.
In any direction.
In either direction. If you take a look at cryptocurrency.
Yeah. A site like Coinbase.
Yeah.
It does a nice job of laying out what the market looks like for those.
It looks like the Alps.
Yeah.
Highs, low.
Looks like a sawtooth.
Exactly.
Pattern. Yeah.
So that's the deal. That's where they're coming from.
Right. They could be flooding the market, which theoretically would drive prices down. And if you're in the market for that particular type of equipment, maybe that's good. I'm also hearing from some of the big players in the market, the Dells, the Apples of the world, HPs, et cetera, that equipment is constrained in the market because of the pandemic, and the factories are facing higher demand. And the demand for the components that go on the motherboards, the chipsets, is in high demand from auto manufacturers, from appliance manufacturers, in addition to computing. So I don't know if that's going to stabilize the prices a bit, if they're going to go quite as low. It'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
It could still be a game changer, I think.
Maybe. Yeah.
It certainly could be.
I think it's worth paying attention to the secondary market sites like eBay or Facebook Marketplace or any of the other places and see what prices tend to trend towards. eBay does some pretty good statistics on closing prices for things, so I would watch out for that.
Check the stats on the specs on that motherboard.
Yeah, make sure it'll do what you want before you pull the trigger.
Do what you want, and it's worth what you're paying for.
Do that sale, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As always, caveat emptor.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Fascinating.
But we'll be sure and read that, and maybe we'll talk about that after the next break or next week.
Yeah, it's about a 5 or 10 minute read.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
We'll check into that. Thanks for giving us a call, and have a fantastic day down in Virginia.
Enjoy your day as well, gentlemen.
Thank you so much. Have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Next winter, we're visiting William.
Oh, yeah.
That's no question.
I'll drive.
Okay. But yeah, cryptocurrency, I hear people all the time. It's such a seductive get-rich-quick scheme.
Right.
The problem remains that it's a pyramid scheme. If you got in at the very beginning, you probably made millions.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's very hard to make decent money. And again, what we're finding is that for most people, it will cost you more in energy costs than you will make in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who wins? RG&E. That's
RG&E wins. That's who wins.
And the manufacturer making the cards.
You're exactly right. And you're right. And NVIDIA. And,
yes. Well, it always makes, you know, you always want to be the person selling shovels to the people that are coming to mine for gold.
That's exactly right. Pickaxes. Those are the people, those are the only people who made money. The people selling the shovels and
selling
the pans
dream.
And the shirts and the overalls.
Right.
But that's how that works. And yes, there are always success stories in those things.
Now, that's not the only way to make money with coin. You can also, like any commodity, you can just
buy it and sell it.
Usually there are some fees involved with the buying and the selling, so keep very close eyes on those. Sometimes the sale doesn't happen immediately. If you're selling things, you have to wait for a transaction to be settled. And that's where the giant swarm of computers that are all mining Bitcoin, that's what they're doing, is that they're doing the math to make all the transactions settle.
Right.
And from an environmental standpoint, it's bad news. It's not great, especially if your power is coming from coal-fired power plants or, you know, oil plants. It's not great. But,
right.
You know, if you want to set up a solar panel or a wind farm and,
exactly.
and mine coin on your Raspberry Pi, something low-powered, then you might do all right.
Well, of course, if you're doing it on the Raspberry Pi, your grandchildren will be dead and gone before you get a tenth of a coin. But you really have to understand that the people making money on Bitcoin are the arbitrage type people.
Yeah.
Right? They know when to buy and when to sell.
Right.
And it's the same as any arbitrage. Big risk, big reward, but you have to know the market.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just coming in and thinking, oh, I can make money at crypto coin, I guarantee you will not. It's the old poker adage. If you look around the table and don't see the fish,
don't see the sucker.
You're the fish.
Yeah, you're the sucker.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
So when we plan our trip to Virginia, I found a website this past week that I thought was pretty cool that you might want to check out. It's called abetterrouteplanner.com. And
nice.
If you are somebody who drives an electric vehicle, you might be wondering, how will I take a long road trip in this, given that it may have less range than my internal combustion engine vehicle?
Right.
And a better route planner lets you specify your start point and your end point, and you tell it which vehicle you have, and it knows based on that what size battery it has and what its capacity is.
And where
it will
you can
route,
charge.
It will route you and send you along a route that has charging points at all the appropriate places. It will tell you how long you'll need to stay at each place, how far you need to charge up to before you can leave, and then how to get to the next place. And I thought this was incredible. I can't believe that I hadn't heard about it until now. So as a person who's been interested in electric cars and thinking about which one to get and which model and how much battery would be enough, you know, I've been looking at it because I mostly just drive around here in the county, and any amount of range would probably be enough for me to do what I need to do and then get home and charge at night.
Right.
I'm conditioned by my cell phone and by my smartwatch to have to charge everything every darn night. So plugging in one more thing probably won't be a big deal. And luckily I have a garage that I can park it in, and I have the ability to get to some electricity out to the garage. So I'm thinking about that. And this lets me also consider, well, what if I need to do a trip, you know, to go visit the in-laws or to go visit someone else or to go visit other family elsewhere in a different state? How would I do that if I needed to? And this at least answers that question programmatically.
That is the one thing that has kept me from seriously looking at.
So, yeah, check that site out, abetterrouteplanner.com. If you suddenly decide you need to book it all the way to Chicago, you know, you can figure out where you're going to stop on the way and which networks, charging networks, those are set up for. So I thought that was pretty neat.
and how far can you go, and how long does it take to charge?
Right. Yeah.
That's it's all the there, real
and how
issue
much are you
right
going to
now
pay?
Yeah.
At each place, so you might stop and I'm going to need to pay $9 for this part, and I'm going to need to pay $3 for this part. I think your cost per mile will still be pretty low, but it's very interesting to at least have that all mapped out, because it answers a lot of the question marks you might have in your head of, well, how would I even do this? Well, it's all right there. They've already worked out all the math.
Look, if you can go that kind of distance for less than the cost of a couple of gallons of gas,
yeah,
you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah. Well, and for somebody like me who's still trying to figure out what kind of vehicle to look at, it helps me see, if I get this vehicle, I need to stop this many times. If I get this other vehicle, this costs a little bit more, but I will only have to stop, fewer times on the same trip. Maybe that's worth more. Interesting.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 30 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we're on the home stretch of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be happy to take your call. And
that's
we
true
might even answer your question, depending on how we feel.
That's right.
We don't have to.
That's right.
You're not the boss of me. I can do what I want. This is America.
It's in my rider.
It's in my rider.
It's one bowl of green M&Ms.
One bowl of green M&Ms, and I don't have to do anything.
No potential, no correct answers necessary.
We have nobody on the line, so I will read. Is actually a good.
Yes, that's a good one. Do that one.
On Wednesday, the Federal Communications Commission opened enrollment for $50 a month broadband subsidies for U.S. residents who have low incomes or who lost income during the pandemic. Over 825 internet service providers across the U.S. are participating in the program, with a link to the full list of ISPs in each state and territories available in our forums. You can actually
Soundbite
see
forums,
that
yep
in the Soundbites forums. You can actually see that at hold on a minute while I
and
it's right on the front page
in Rochester.
It's
I
like
believe the local phone company was in there.
Yeah, a couple. No, that was the wrong thing. Hold on 1 second. Of course, now it slows down. Yeah, it's the 1, 2, 3.
Hey guys,
four.
Watch me tap dance.
Steve's doing all this stuff. Look at him go. But if you look farther down the list, you will see, right on the front page, the emergency broadcast benefit program, and it'll tell you how to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's in our forums. All the biggest ISPs, hundreds of smaller ones are participating. So the subsidy should be available in most areas with home internet access.
And this is not just Rochester, not just New York. This is nationwide.
This is nationwide. So those of you listening in lovely Virginia or
anywhere
else,
you might be, if you need help, this is a good way to try and make it happen.
That's right. Cable, fiber to the home, DSL, fixed wireless ISPs are among the home internet services included in the program. The subsidies aren't just for home internet. As many mobile providers are participating in the program as well.
Right.
To enroll, go to getemergencybroadband.org. That's in that link. That link is in the post.
The forum. All right. So one more time, that's getemergencybroadband.org.
Exactly. Click on the Apply Now button. The FCC acknowledged that it is having some trouble handling the high number of people trying to sign up. So it is working on a fix. If you can't get in, wait a day or two. Or do it in an off time. Yeah, I know you're up at 2 in the morning. Do it then. Congress approved the subsidy program in December, providing $3.2 billion.
Wow.
This pandemic-related program will continue until the $3.2 billion in federal funding runs out, or 6 months after Department of Health and Human Services declares an end to the pandemic, the FCC said. Eligible households will be able to receive on their broadband bill a discount of up to $50 per month, or $75 on qualifying tribal lands. They will also be eligible for a one-time discount of up to $100 to purchase a laptop, desktop computer, or tablet from participating providers if they contribute more than $10 and less than $50 toward the purchase price.
Nice.
So you can get a Chromebook for $130, $140.
Right.
And you'll pay $30 or $40.
That's right. And they'll cover the majority of that, and they'll also help cover your monthly costs as well.
Perfect.
And if you're the kind of family where your primary way to get on the internet is through a cell phone, and either sharing that to another device or using that device itself, then this subsidy helps pay for that as well.
Right. There are a half a dozen ways or so to qualify for this subsidy. Households with incomes at or below 135% of government federal poverty guidelines qualify, as do people who suffered a substantial loss of income since the pandemic began. All the ways in which households can qualify are listed on the program's official website. The FCC is also moving closer to implementing a separate $7.17 billion emergency fund.
Wow.
Yeah, that Congress approved for schools and libraries. The FCC approved rules for the program Tuesday, saying that the fund will enable schools and libraries to purchase laptop and tablet computers, Wi-Fi hotspots, and broadband connectivity for students, school staff, and library patrons in need during the COVID-19 pandemic. So, have you looked into these discounts? What have your experiences been like? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, I think this is fantastic. I'm very happy that there are some relief efforts to make technology distributed further than it has been in the past. And I think that this is a great way to try and keep education flowing to people who need help. And I really could not be happier about this.
Well, seriously, whatever you may have thought of internet connectivity before, since the pandemic, we've discovered it is no longer a luxury,
no,
but a necessity.
It's a utility, yeah. It's like having fresh water or sewer lines or electricity.
And there are a lot of people who simply cannot afford it, and those are the people who need it the most in many cases.
True.
So the fact that the government has stepped up is all to the credit. And this was done, in fact, by the previous administration. So those are about to call up and
complain. If you're doing the right thing, you're doing the right thing. It doesn't matter who you are.
Exactly right. So I applaud them for that. It's a great thing to do. It's a great idea. I'm delighted that they're doing it. And I think that if you fall under those guidelines, you should get on that website. Of course, following the guidelines, you may not be able to get on the website. That's a separate issue. But you can go to a friend's house, or you can go to the library or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Get on that website, see if you qualify, sign up, and take advantage of this. The government is helping you out. Take advantage of that.
Absolutely. If you need that assistance, it's there for you.
Yep.
People want to help.
Yep. And it's there, and they're willing, and you should go do it. It's a quick and easy thing online to see if you qualify and to get help. Go to your local library, go to, you know, whatever, and do it. Lots of kids have been loaned Chromebooks to do schoolwork this year. But if you don't have an internet connection, that does not help you.
That's right. Yeah, it's not super helpful.
Right. And particularly people in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
Where internet service is extremely expensive, and you may only have one provider,
and it may not be high speed.
That's exactly right, and particularly on tribal lands, which are traditionally underserved.
Yeah.
So the ability for anybody in those areas to get assistance is something I completely applaud. So if you are, you know, if you're the sort of person who feels that they qualify, you should go to get emergency
broadband.org, right,
and sign up. I completely don't even see it on here. There it is. Get emergency broadband.org. Yeah, you were right. I just didn't see it, and I knew it was on that page somewhere.
So tangentially, I've been following the SpaceX launches, and one of the things they've been doing is launching a constellation of satellites that they want to use to spread internet connectivity into many places that might be underserved.
Starlink.
Yeah, called Starlink. And you buy a receiver box that sits outside and looks at the sky, and it receives signals from these low Earth orbiting satellites and turns that into Wi-Fi for you to use nearby. So, you know, I guess you still need electricity, so you'll have to work that out. But the pricing for it was not ridiculous. I think it was about $100 a month, which admittedly is a lot. But if you could get the subsidy and get it cut in half,
it's not bad.
That's not too bad. And there may be ways to share that among multiple people. And if I was out in the middle of nowhere and in a place that was covered, that might be an interesting thing to do. There are other wireless ISPs that will do very similar to cell phone networks to give you internet that way as well. But there are many more options, and I really like seeing multiple options for people to do this. One of the advantages now is that chipsets are getting so much more power efficient. The time you can go between charges on computers and communications equipment is growing, and I'm optimistic that that's going to make a brighter future for lots of people, including those who may not have had as many opportunities to be online.
Yeah, exactly. It's great that they're doing this. It's still a beta program.
Yeah, it's still early days.
Yeah,
but I'm optimistic about the future of this.
Yeah, it really does. You know, this in particular, when you're in places where they are not going to be upgrading the 50, 60, 70 year old copper lines.
Right. Rural areas. This is another way to do it.
Right.
And there have been other satellite providers in the past. I think HughesNet was one of the big ones that I've worked on maybe 15 years ago for a client. And those were more expensive, and the transfer rates were just okay. But the lag from the time you clicked a link in the browser until you got a response was so laggy that it made you question, oh, wait, is there something broken in between that's not working? And then just about the time that you had that thought, then the page would flip and load to the next thing you clicked on. So it was it would work, and it was better than dial-up, but only a bit.
Well, I have acquaintances and friends who live in rural areas, and some of them have things like a cell phone hotspot.
Yeah.
Which is all they can get.
Right.
It works. It's not tremendously fast.
Right.
And it is also horrendously expensive.
Yeah.
But it's the only way they can get their internet connectivity.
Right.
And that's for everything. You want to watch something on Netflix?
It's going through that little drinking straw of bandwidth you've got when you're used to the fire hose, and that's it'll get you there, but it's, you got to think twice about it. It's a lot like, do you remember the old days when you'd have a phone in your house and you'd wait until after 9 to make your long distance calls because it was cheaper?
Yes, I do.
Because it was just so much more expensive to do it during the day.
Yep.
And, when gas has shot up and you suddenly think twice before making that extra trip to two counties away for the day.
Yep.
When things become much more expensive, you start watching it much more closely.
And I have also become extremely used to green light speeds.
Oh, sure.
I'm spoiled, and I completely admit it.
Yeah, I was that way when I went away to college, and we were on super fast lines, and then you'd go home, and you'd go use your dial-up at home, and you'd, oh boy, it's going to be a long summer.
Yeah, I used to spend a lot of extra time.
Hang the phone back up, I'm trying to use the internet.
Mom! I'm on the internet. Yeah.
I almost got that JPEG downloaded.
Yeah, right. but I remember the days of staying late at work because the internet connectivity was fast.
Yeah. Well, and that was the whole thing with Cyber Monday, after Black Friday. The whole thing with Cyber Monday was everybody had fast internet at work. Nobody had fast internet at home. So people would wait until Monday morning to get to work, pretend like they were doing work, and meanwhile be shopping for holiday presents for their loved ones online.
Oh, I got to tell my story. I ordered an item.
Okay.
and it was to be delivered. And on this particular delivery service, you can opt in for text messages.
All right. So they'll let you know when they're on the way or when to expect it or did something happen?
Yeah. At 9 a.m., I got a message that said it would be delivered between 1:30 and 3.
Okay, 1:30 and 3. All right, so after lunch, you're saying, all right, it'll be here.
No, 11:30 and 3. 11:30 and 3.
Okay.
I got this at 9 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, I got a message that said it would be delivered between 1 and 4.
Shifted back in the day a little bit. Might be having some kind of delay, but that's okay. They're letting you know, keeping you informed.
At 10:15, I got a message that said it was on the porch.
Slightly ahead of schedule. Good news.
So basically, it was random deliveries.
Yeah, yeah. Under promise, over deliver.
Here you go.
Yeah, let's say that.
Take what you get. Take what you get. I did that many years ago. I'm going to tell this story, and I can tell it now because I'm retired. There was a point at which we were buying all our faculty new laptops.
Okay. It happens.
And of course,
eventually,
sadly, my dean made the mistake of announcing that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so now you've got this line outside your door every day.
Every single day.
Knock, knock, knock. Are they here yet?
The laptop's here, the laptop's here. So I had a screen in my door that said, you know, I'm here in this time and
sure.
I've gone to here and whatever. And so I added a line at the bottom that said, estimated laptop delivery date. And it was in days.
Okay.
And every night at midnight, it put up a random number between 30 and 50.
How many knocks did you get after that?
None. They would come to the door and see the random delivery was 42 days. The next day it would be 31 days. The next day it would be 50 days.
Right.
Nobody ever said
it would drop
about
down
that.
To 20. People would walk, whistle away, strutting around like, all right, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming.
And
then
I can
the following
say that
day,
now only because I'm completely retired.
60 days, they walk away, slump shoulders, looking
at
the floor.
But they had an answer, and that's all they wanted. It didn't have to be a correct answer. It didn't even have to be a real answer. They just wanted an answer.
That's right.
And they got one. So
yeah, correct answers cost more.
Exactly. So, and you know, my
and you knew they were going to really hold you to it. They just wanted an answer.
They just wanted an answer. And what it meant was that I could concentrate on my job instead of listening to everybody complain about why they needed it sooner, like I was holding it up.
Yeah. Because that's what you do.
Yeah.
It's your new thing.
That's my thing.
Go back there and get them.
Exactly. No, we got them a week ago.
Yeah.
I just don't want to give you yours.
They're in the back.
And of course, once they did show up, we had to set them all up
with our
whole payload, right?
Yeah.
Right software and all the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, get them ready to deploy.
So I didn't take the randomizer down until the day we started delivering them.
Right.
When I just changed it to starting deliveries tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
Because we couldn't deliver everybody's at once.
Sure.
So as long as people knew it was tomorrow, then I say, hey, you know, Jane got hers or Joe got his. Yeah, we started early. We'll get to you very shortly.
Yeah, yeah, it should be tomorrow.
Yeah.
No matter what day it is.
Yeah. So, yes. All of my faculty, I lied to you. I lied
like little orphan Annie tomorrow.
Right to your little faces. I love each and every one of you individually and collectively, but I lied to you because it was more convenient for me. That's a one off.
Oh boy. Well, hopefully the statute of limitations is up on that.
What are they going to do? Fire me? I've been retired longer than I worked there. So no, I have not. No, I have really not.
Not yet.
Not for many years. Not for many decades, but still, people forget, you know, that you said it's going to be 60 days.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So then 12 days in,
they're like, where's my computer? We said 60 days. No, you didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Believe me, we did.
If it was up to me, you'd already have it.
Right. I'm not holding it back. I don't want the aggravation.
Yeah.
I want it out of my hands as soon as it gets here.
Ugh.
Trust me on this.
And that's where I am with these delays that I'm hearing about from some of the big players that we tend to order from.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness. And we have a project manager whose job it is to be what I call the air traffic controller.
Yep.
To talk with all the people and get them all lined up so that they have their old equipment. We're ready to move their information from the old one to the new one. And she does a fantastic job at this. And I make sure to tell her that every time we talk. And we're very thankful so that us nerds down in the basement don't have to play phone tag with everybody and deal with that. But when I hear that the big players are suddenly 6 weeks out, you can start to get quotes. And then, you know, 8 weeks after that, we expect delivery. And it's like, oh, boy.
Yep.
We try to work that in with our academic calendar. And it can be tricky because you want to get everything done during the summer if you can. But sometimes it's just not possible due to factors outside your control.
And, of course, every Monday morning I sent out an email that said we've placed, because everything was controlled by us and we could do what we wanted, I said we've placed an icon on your desktop. This is what it looks like. If you click on it, it will back up all the data you're not supposed to be saving on the laptop to the network.
Yes.
Make sure you do that before we get to your office with the new one.
Right.
Or we will put you at the back of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Many people did not take 1 minute to click on the link.
And you were really trying to help them skirt the rules that they were supposed to be following anyway.
Yes. Yes.
Rather than just nuking their stuff and having to deal with that, you really wanted to help them out.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yep. That's people are people.
That's true.
And I get it. I do get it. But it's interesting. It's interesting.
Everybody has different areas of interest.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
That's okay. And I've often said, you know, I couldn't do half of what most of my faculty does.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
You know, I if you put me in front of their job, whether in your case it's a bass violin or
For those that don't know, my during the week job, my jobby job, as my wife and I call it, is to be an administrator at the Eastman School of Music. And we have professors there who are vocalists, and we have professors there who play piano better than I could ever dream of doing in a million years, and any other instrument you can dream of. I joke with them. I point at the piano keyboard. I say, "You play that keyboard. I play this QWERTY keyboard."
Yeah, right.
We're on the same team. You do your thing. I'll do my thing. We'll get along just fine, and I'll help you where I can.
So I never disparage them, and I never,
never
none of that stuff. But
no, I'm in awe.
They
of
were
what
humans.
Able to do. Yeah,
and so
that's
they
true.
They had their foibles. All right,
as we all do.
That music tells us we are done. For another week, I want to thank Dennis Worster, who takes time out from his very busy life to come in here and relieve the pressure on me when
happy
it's
to do
me.
It. Always a fun time.
It always is a joy to have you here. And the same with Michael Oden.
That's true.
Who, again, takes time out from his real life to stand here at the board and punch buttons.
Punch buttons,
I very
and
much
move
appreciate
sliders
that.
And keep things flowing.
Exactly. And I want to thank everyone who listened, who called in. We appreciate you. You're what keep this show on the air. For Michael Oden and for Dennis Worster, I'm Nick Francesco. Please vote in the poll. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.